The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's the Bay's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher, and welcome back to another week of NFL coverage here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 6 weeks of the NFL season are in the bags, and we saw the last of the undefeated teams go down, while the only two winless teams were the first two teams in last year's NFL draft. Go figure that one out. The Niners did come close this weekend, but once again, they lost the fall to 0-6, so it looks like we got two losers in the Bay Area as the Raiders somehow lost to the Los Angeles Chargers. And man, oh man, we got a lot to talk about, so let's just go ahead and hop right in it.
We know that we have to get better. We've got to improve. We've got to improve. You get what you earn in this league, and we got bigger things in front of us.
Let's go.
Let's go make a play, man.
Today's the day. Right. Start to finish. Leave it all right there for each other. Leave the game with nothing, baby. Play for each other.
I just want to win.
Rivers back.
Kyle Joseph intercepts.
Going to throw lob wide open. Amari Cooper got it.
Hey, keep coming on these guys now.
Six weeks into the NFL season, and the Raiders are now 2-4 on the year after losing their fourth straight loss to the Los Angeles Chargers. The Raiders lost four games all of last year, and now we already got four losses in the loss column, and we lost to the Los Angeles Chargers. What the fuck is going on? I said last week, if we lost to the Chargers, I might be hitting the panic button, and I'm getting closer and closer and closer to smashing the shit out of it, but I can't even be that much in a panic because, honestly, it's not even like the Chargers won. I feel more like the Raiders lost. I felt like we gave this game away. The Raiders should have won this game easily, and we handed it to the Chargers and lost 17-16. So let's go ahead and hop right into it and see how this all happened. The Raiders started off the game kicking the ball off, and the Raiders defense came off huge with a big three and out, but the Raiders offense gives the ball right back as Derek Carr on his first pass of the game throws an interception. This looked like it was a case of mistiming between Michael Crabtree and Derek Carr, maybe even a case of miscommunication because Derek Carr let the ball go a little bit too early. We've seen Derek all year long throw the ball before the wide receiver is even done with his route. Well, it looked like Michael Crabtree on this route could have been an option route where he cut it early and Derek threw it deep and just gave the Chargers an easy interception and set the Chargers up at the Raiders 30-yard line. But as I mentioned, his defense came out to play today because they got another big hold with a three and out, and San Diego missed a field goal. I thought it didn't matter who's kicking, the young Korean kid or they got Novak back. They missed a field goal, and the score is still 0-0. The Raiders then take the momentum from the missed kick and go 62 yards on 11 plays on the back of Marshawn Lynch, and they top it off with a corner route touchdown on Michael Crabtree to put the Raiders up 7-0. The second quarter was a little bit quiet until the Chargers' final drive where they went 82 yards on 15 plays and completed 3 third down conversions. They completed on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. Those first two three and outs that the defense put up would have been huge here, but we could not get off 3rd down on this drive. And on 4th and goal, Melvin Gordon gets into the end zone, and we got a tie ball game at 7-7. But the Raiders do manage to get some points right before the half ends as they drive 34 yards in 7 plays in just 1:44 to set up Giorgio Tavecchio for a 44-yard field goal to put the Raiders up 10-7 at the half. Flip it over to the second half now. The Raiders offense came out with the ball, and they came out hot as they went down 49 yards on 13 plays, driving it down all the way to the Chargers' 15-yard line. And then Marshawn Lynch can't catch a football. We've seen him diving and tumbling all over the field whenever he gets thrown to this year. Well, he could not handle a check down pass. It tips right off his hands for an easy INT for the Chargers. That means no touchdown, no field goal, no points, just another turnover by the Raiders and giving the ball right back to the Chargers. But luckily, once again, they did not score points off the turnover as their defense holds again with Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack. The Slash Brothers getting a slack on Phillip Rivers. And on their next drive, David Amerson recovers a fumble by Tyrell Williams at the Los Angeles Chargers 49-yard line. And I'm thinking, all right, perfect. We just got a turnover finally. We're in Chargers territory. We're going to get some points. But nope, first play, we're going backwards. Bad snap right over Derek Carr's head. Pushed the Raiders back to the Raiders' own 44-yard line. They were managed to able to get back up to the Los Angeles Chargers' 41-yard line on a couple passes to slot Roberts. But now it's 4th-and-2 on the Chargers' 41-yard line. And I'm just thinking, man, when is Sebastian Janikowski going to be back? Because anytime we're above midfield past the logo, I want the Polish cannon in the game. I want the Polish cannon to be booting 60-yarders, but Sebastian Janikowski still is on IR. Don't got too much faith on Giorgio Tavecchio to hit those deep balls because we did not take the field goal when we were almost in the same exact position last week against the Ravens. But let me tell you about the flip situations. Here we had 4th-and-2. And we choose not to punt it and go for it. Unfortunately, yes, hindsight is 20/20. We did not complete the pass as Michael Crabtree and Derek Carr cannot connect on an out route. But then it gives the Chargers the ball back with a short field. Compare this to a week ago when it was 4th-and-3 and we were down 10 points. And then Jack Del Rio decided to punt the ball. Now we're up 3 points and he decides to go for it. A little bit of tricky play calling. I don't got any problems with him going for 4th down. You know I love Black Jack Del Rio. I love big balls Jack. I want him to go out there and play aggressive and go and play for the win to put the dagger in the Chargers. But this was the day that Marquette King was phenomenal flipping the field. He had so many punts down inside the 5-10 yard line. He was out there pulling off the shocker, the old Sean Merriman celebration for the Chargers. He was all over the field. But no, we choose to go for it on 4th-and-2. Derek Carr's first game back. Him and Crabtree, as I mentioned, cannot connect on the out route. And it gives the Chargers a short field to start the fourth quarter. And right away, they go 59 yards on 10 plays with this little dink and dump offense. I'm talking check downs left and right to Melvin Gordon. And once again, Melvin Gordon gets a check down inside the red zone for a Chargers touchdown. And the Chargers take the lead 14-10, but the Raiders had to respond and they answered back in 4 plays with a Cordell Patterson 47-yard rushing touchdown. Flash took it straight to the house in a flash of a second, and the Raiders go back up 16-14. Yes, keyword 16-14, because we missed the goddamn extra point. Giorgio Tavecchio misses the kick after it was a high snap by John Kondo. And of all days of John Kondo to fuck up, I was literally talking about John Kondo of how many times he made the Pro Bowl all Sunday, saying, hey, there's our Pro Bowler John Kondo making plays once again. And what do you know? John Kondo, for one of the few times in his life, fucks up. I mean, we saw what happened a couple years ago when John Kondo got hurt in that game against the Chargers and we had all those bad snaps with our backup long snapper. Then we saw last year where the Chargers couldn't get a snap down and try to tie the game with a field goal late. Well, we had another case of snapping, holding, kicking, fuck up once again in Oakland as we cannot get the ball down. Marquette King actually made one hell of a play, caught the high snap, put it down, but Giorgio Tavecchio cannot hit the extra point, and it proved costly because the Raiders defense actually came back though and gets another big 3-and-out with only 5 minutes left in the game. But the Raiders offense cannot put the game away, and this is on coaching. This is the reason why we got Marshawn Lynch, so he could come in with 5-6 minutes in the game and just run the ball down their throat. We've seen the Ravens do it against us. We now seen the Chargers do it against us at the end of this game. But Marshawn Lynch, he should have been handing the ball. And on our final drive of the game, first play, Todd Downing now all of a sudden decides that he wants to go downfield to Amari Cooper. All right, I'm fine with that. Hits him for 19 yards, but it's called back by holding on Gabe Jackson. Penalties and just lack of execution really killed us in this game. Next thing you know, it's 3rd-and-12, and we run a hook and ladder. Okay, this isn't the last play of the game. I like the creativity, but they're playing a soft zone. They were giving up the 10 yards in front to make the tackle. You throw a hook and ladder that only goes 8 yards. Shit, you should have just dialed up the same play and go deep to Cooper. You needed 12 yards, and you throw a 10-yard hook and ladder. I'm not too big of a fan of the play calling on that one as well. And then what do you know? The Raiders got to go three and out. They punt the ball back to the Chargers with 4 minutes left in the game within their own 15-yard line. And the defense cannot stop Hunter Henry, and they cannot stop Melvin Gordon. Right away, right off the back, Philip Rivers goes double corner routes to Hunter Henry, beats Carl Joseph twice. Carl Joseph, that's a tough mismatch for him. Like I said, that's the reason why we drafted Obi in the second round as a bigger safety, because Carl Joseph, as much as he hit, he's not the tallest guy. He's not the biggest guy. So it is kind of a mismatch against safeties. It was interesting to see Sean Smith was benched for this game and didn't even play at all. We're paying him all that money. He didn't play one snap. This is a guy that I thought we could bring in at outside linebacker, as maybe a slot corner, and just match him up on the tight ends all day, because, hey, he's not going to get outrun by tight ends unless he's playing Jimmy Graham or Vernon Davis or someone with ridiculous speed. But a guy like Hunter Henry, I thought that would have been a perfect matchup for Sean Smith. But nope, they just drive down the field. And once they got to about midfield, it was all Melvin Gordon. They got a first down after the two-minute warning, and they just killed the clock. Just ate up the clock after that two-minute warning. They kicked the field goal, and they won the game. And I'm still sitting there like, no, this is the Los Angeles Chokers. They got to choke right now. They got to miss this field goal. But nope, they did not give the game away. And the Raiders somehow found a way to lose the game. And I have that in big writing, lose the game. The Chargers didn't win. The Raiders lost the game, because this was just purely pathetic. We should not lose against the Chargers, especially when they only put up 17 points a game. This is a man, Philip Rivers, who averages over 28 points per game in his career as a San Diego Charger. I mean, I can't put the blame on the defense, because like I said, any game that the defense lets up less than 21 points, the Raiders should be winning. This offense has looked deficient so far. And let's talk about it, because Derek Carr came back from his injury, ended the day 21 of 30 for 171 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. Those two turnovers were huge, even though it was miscommunication and then just Marshawn not catching a ball. But the Raiders are now 0-9 when Derek Carr throws two interceptions in a game. And honestly, I'm glad to have him back, but he didn't look like the same Derek out there. I know the game plan could have been switched up a little bit. 25 of the 30 passes that he threw were within 10 yards. This isn't the Raiders' vertical offense. This is Al Davis' speed kills vertical offense. And 25 of the 30 passes were within 10 yards. Okay, I understand the game plan against Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, two great defensive ends who can get to the quarterback. But 25 of 30 within 10 yards? You only throw the ball downfield five times in a whole game. Derek Carr is only 3 for 10 on deep balls this year. That's the fewest in the NFL. That's completed the fewest. That's attempted the fewest. So what the hell is going on with this offense, Todd Downing? I understand the game plan. Derek Carr, you don't want to get hurt first game back, but you still got to take your shots. You got to use your weapons. You got to use Amari Cooper. Todd Downing, I talked about him last week, our offensive coordinator. This play calling has been absolutely terrible. He has turned his offense from a top 10 offense to a bottom 10 offense. How does that happen when we make upgrades on the offense? We upgrade with Marshawn Lynch. We upgrade with Jared Cook. We upgrade, get Cordell Patterson. And this offense is the reasons we're not winning games? I mean, it has been terrible the way that Todd Downing has called games so far. He's so predictable. I'll take this back to the first couple weeks of the season when everybody was like, oh, Tony Romo's a genius. He can predict the future. He knows what plays the Raiders are going to call. Hey, I'm sitting there drinking beers knowing which plays the Raiders are going to call too. It's because it's that obvious the way that he always runs the ball under center. He's not running any play action. He doesn't throw any ball deep down the field. And he's changed his whole run game from more of a power scheme to a zone blocking scheme. It hasn't shown any dividends. We've seen the running game suffer from it. The running game actually was played better this game, but it's still not the running game that we saw last year when this offensive line was just straight up dominating, when we had the car insurance just mauling people. Kelechi Osemele, I saw him whiff a block for the first time ever. Rashard and Washington got eaten up. They had a combined 5 carries for -9 yards. And this offensive line is a line that does not miss blocks too often. But when you're reaching, trying to get to that zone scheme, you're going to miss plays. You got to go back to that power scheme, because that fits Marshawn Lynch's repertoire. And that fits with our offensive line. I mean, I'm having flashbacks of Greg Knapp when he did this to Darren McFadden. And we tried to switch from a power to a zone scheme. Man, I'm going through all this all over again. It's deja vu. But Marshawn Lynch actually ran the ball hard this game. His first run of the game came out and ran for 15 yards before Derek Carr threw that interception on that first drive. He ended the day with 13 carries, 68 yards, averaging almost 5 yards a carry. He ended the day 4.8 yards per carry, and we should have just kept feeding him and feeding him and feeding him the rock. That final drive of the game on first down, I like that Todd Downing finally had the balls to go downfield, but why would you do that on your final drive of the game when you're winning, when you've got the lead? kill the clock, run the ball. I don't know what's going on with this Raiders offense. Todd Downing, I'm getting fed up with their play calling. The Raiders had 7 3 and outs this weekend. There was only 3 drives that had more than 4 plays stringed together. Where is the flow? Where is the execution? I know it's on the players at some point, Carr and Crabtree, miscommunication, but Todd Downing, when you're so goddamn predictable, every first down you're going to run the ball with Marshawn Lynch. Every second down you're going to do a short little dump off. You're so predictable, you don't mix up the plays. There's lack of deep ball, lack of play action. Like I said earlier, he's just done so much to his offense that has just turned it into an offense that doesn't look anything similar to what it looked like last year. This was a playoff team offense. This was a top 10 offense. This was an offense that I said would be scoring 30 points per game. And no, now we're scoring less than 20 points per game. Now we're 2-4. Now we're sitting here with losses. Now we're sitting here about to smash the fuck out of the panic button. But I can't even smash it yet because I still believe in this Raiders team. Yes, I still believe all 3 of these games these past 3 weeks were all winnable games. Jack Del Rio, the head coach, has got to take some heat. 3 weeks in a row, either that fake punt call, the not going for it on 4th-and-3, down 10 points, the going for it on 4th-and-2, up 3 points. Jack Del Rio, this has got to put some blame on you as well. Not only the offensive coordinator, Todd Downing, who might be on the hot seat now. Kendall Orton Jr., a lot of people were coming at him before the season, after the season ended last year, but the defense has played above expectations. The offense has played below expectations. What does that mean? That means something's wrong. We've seen already with the Giants this year, they give a play call to somebody else. We've seen with Andy Dalton, they fired the offensive coordinator. I think it might be time for a change in Oakland. Todd Downing, your time might be up. We could have Mike Tice step up and help him call plays. He's an offensive mind on the offensive line coach. Man, the Raiders got to figure out something, but I'm just not ready to give up yet. 2-4, we've already lost as many games as we lost last year. But I still think we're a playoff team. And if you don't, come put your money where your mouth is. Come bet me some money because I still think the Raiders can make the wild card. Can maybe even win their division because the thing is, we're only 3 games back in the AFC West. And we still got to play the Chiefs twice. And we get the Chiefs this week on Thursday Night Football. But before we get into breaking down the Raiders Chiefs in a pivotal primetime matchup Thursday Night Football, let's stop and recap all of our bets and review every pick we made from Week 6 in the NFL. Let's go ahead and check out Week 6 in 60 seconds.
It's Sunday in 60 seconds, Week 6. Here we go. The Saints leap the Lions in a wild one. Laquon Treadwell makes this catch in real life.
Treadwell, great one-handed catch by Laquon Treadwell.
Bears fans are excited about this rookie quarterback and this rookie quarterback.
Riccone's going to throw into the end zone.
The Jets make it a game, but come up just short against the Pats. Fournette wastes no time extending his 6-game touchdown streak. Matt Ryan airs it out, but can't fight off the fish. Pierre Garçon gets a nice tip. Adrian Peterson clearly prefers the dry heat in Phoenix.
Up the middle, and he will take it all the way for an Arizona touchdown.
The All-Harvard connection might make this the smartest touchdown ever thrown. Big Ben's bouncing ball to Brown sinks the Chiefs, and the Giants get a W at Mile High.
In a stunner, I mean with a capital S.
Time's up. Turn the lights out on a great Week 6.
Turn the lights out on a crazy Week 6 that saw 8 of 12 underdogs win on Sunday. And let's go ahead and start off this Week 6 review with an underdog that we picked to win you some money. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers covering the 4-point spread to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Just as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, there are no more undefeated teams as the Chiefs fall 5-1 after losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers 19-13 at home. And this was a game that the Chiefs really did look like they were getting dominated, at least in the first half for sure, because the Steelers outgained the Chiefs 232 yards to 6 in the first half. Yes, to 6 total yards in that first half. This Pittsburgh Steelers defense did a great job of controlling Kareem Hunt on the ground. He finished the day with only 9 carries for 21 yards. Did top 100 with the additional 89 receiving yards, but still to contain Kareem Hunt was absolutely impressive from this Pittsburgh Steelers defense that really hasn't been playing too well this year. But this was all Pittsburgh Steelers offense as Big Ben Roethlisberger shows he still got a little something in the old cowboy as he throws for 252 yards, a touchdown, did have an INT, but him and Antonio Brown were just tearing up the field left and right, as Antonio Brown had 8 catches for 155 yards and that huge touchdown that put away the Chiefs as they tried to sneak back in that second half. This is a ball that actually should have been picked. It hit off the dude's face from the Chiefs, bounced off. Antonio Brown played it like he was in the pinball machine at an arcade and took it to the house. And here's a number for you. Antonio Brown has now averaged over 100 yards in his last 77 games. 77 in a row. This man has averaged 100 yards. You want to talk about consistency? Man, the Killer Bees came out and put it on the Chiefs. Alex Smith did struggle in this game, even though he did not turn the ball over. Threw for 246 yards, and it wasn't until late that he got things going for this Kansas City Chiefs offense. We saw Travis Kelce get involved a little bit, but we saw a huge wide open guy standing in the corner of the end zone, but the Chiefs had to settle for a field goal. Then the Steelers were able to put the game away on the back of Le'Veon Bell as he carried 32 times for 179 yards and 1 touchdown. Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown leading the league in receiving and rushing this week. This was a purely dominant performance from the Steelers, and it ended as a close game, but it doesn't matter because the Chiefs were the favorite and the Steelers covered the points and got the win and knocked out the only undefeated team in football. And hopefully this demoralizes the Chiefs and it carries over to Thursday Night Football against the Raiders, because the AFC West is looking like it's still up for grabs with the Chiefs losing to the Steelers this weekend, because the Broncos also lost to the Giants. Yes, the only team that won from the AFC West this weekend was the Chargers. Yes, the Chargers were the only team in arguably the best division of football to win a game. I will go on the record right now and say that is going to be the only time that this happens all season long, because the Raiders lost to the Chargers, obviously. The Chiefs got their first loss of the season, and the Broncos got absolutely humiliated on Sunday Night Football to the New York Giants. The 0-5 New York Giants are now 1-5 as they get their first win of the year, and the Broncos were the second team of the weekend. They did it with the Atlanta Falcons, the only two teams in the past 5 years to lose as a 13-plus point favorite in the past 5 years. That's how much they were favored going into this game. We saw the Giants offense last week was depleted of wide receivers. Down goes Odell, down goes Brandon Marshall, down goes Sterling Sharp. Well, it was Evan Ingram, the rookie tight end out of Ole Miss, who had to step up with 5 catches for 82 yards and a touchdown. And it was Orleans Darkwa, 21 carries for 117 yards. Yes, Marshawn Lynch couldn't do it. LeSean McCoy couldn't do it. Ezekiel Elliott couldn't do it. But Orleans Darkwa can run for 100 yards on one of the best rush defenses in the league. This is supposed to be the no-run zone, but they got absolutely ran all over as Eli Manning only had to throw for 128 yards. This was the Giants' defense and running the ball that got the job done. This is the Giants' defense that was so hyped up last year. Well, they came out to play as JPP had one hell of a day. I believe he had 3 sacks. Shout out that he was doing a sack dance for a girl with childhood cancer. That's a great man right there, JPP, even though everybody makes fun of his hand being blown off, but he's still highly productive and he's still getting after the quarterback. The Broncos just got straight shut down. Even though Trevor Siemian threw for 376 yards, it's because they're losing the whole game. They had to keep throwing. He did throw 1 touchdown, had 2 interceptions, and he actually had to leave the game late with a shoulder injury. We had Brock Osweiler come in, and we knew the game was over. And the Giants just took care of the Broncos soundly, 23-10. And like I said, the only team in the AFC West that got the W was the Chargers. Go figure the fuck that out. But let's keep it moving as we stick in the NFC East. We'll go ahead and look at the number one team in the NFC East. That is the Philadelphia Eagles, as the Cowboys had a bye this week. The Eagles made up a huge game on Thursday Night Football as they beat the Panthers 28-23. Carson Wentz, I've talked all year how he's been doing so well. He has one hell of a game once again as he throws for 222 yards and 3 touchdowns. He now leads the NFL in jersey sales. I think the Eagles are finally realizing what they got at quarterback there. Alshon Jeffrey had 4 catches for 71 yards, and LeGarrette Blount got it done running the ball, but it was the Eagles' rush defense that actually held the Panthers in check. The Eagles now have the number one rushing defense in the NFL. McCaffrey couldn't get anything done on the ground. Jonathan Stewart couldn't get anything done on the ground. I believe they're averaging 2 inches per carry. Yes, 2 inches per carry. I don't know how someone even measured that out, but those were the numbers, and the Panthers looked pathetic running the ground. Cam Newton was the leading rusher with 71 yards and a touchdown, but Cam got the best of him as he threw three interceptions. A couple of those were tipped up in the air, but those were three huge turnovers that the Eagles took advantage of, and the Eagles improved to 5-1 to tie the Chiefs for the first place record in the NFL. Hey, watch out now. The Fly Eagles fly with Carson Wentz, the weapons they got, and the way that the defense is playing. The Eagles are looking like a top contender in that NFC East, and let's go ahead and stay in the NFC East as we'll go and talk about the Redskins, who also improved to 3-2 after getting a close win against the Bay's own San Francisco 49ers. And man, oh man, what a close game it was as the Niners lost by 2 points once again, making them the first team ever to lose five straight games by less than 3 points. Yes, the 49ers last five games, all within a field goal, all within a point or two, really, and they cannot find a way to get the win. They had a chance this game as C.J. Beathard came in for Brian Hoyer after he was benched in the first quarter, and C.J. Beathard actually threw pretty well, 245 yards, did have a touchdown, but had that big INT to end the game. They were trying to drive downfield, get the win, but he threw a game-ending interception in the 49ers' loss, and they dropped to 0-6 on the year, and I got to address it because I was just mocking people last week when I said, oh, are they the best 0-5 team? But no, I'm literally seeing people on Twitter post stats defending the Niners being 0-6, the best 0-6 team ever. Yes, they bring up numbers from back in the day when the Chargers were 0-6 and say, hey, this was a pretty good 0-6 team, but the 49ers, they're the best 0-6 in history. Well, what the hell does 0-6 get you except for a first overall draft pick? And that's exactly what the 49ers need, and that's exactly what I've been saying the 49ers need to do the whole entire season is lose close games. Lose close games. If I was a 49er fan, I'd be ecstatic right now because you know you don't got talent to make the playoffs. You're 0-6. As I mentioned, 0-5 teams have never made the playoffs. The Raiders sitting at 2-4. They got a chance, but the Niners are absolutely done. So why not just keep losing close games? Carlos Hyde, you got to get him involved more. He had 13 carries, 28 yards, did have two touchdowns, but C.J. Beathard, you guys should be thanking him for throwing that late-game interception. The Niners, you did not want to win that game. They were plus 9.5 favorites, and I told you to take them in the points. So like I said, the Niners are still winning us some money. They're still losing, and they're still inching closer to that first overall draft pick. I know my man Harney would be happy right now. Money and draft picks, hey, it's all part of the process. It's all part of the process. 49ers fans, you know Joel Embiid. You got a hashtag trust the process, and hey, it's going to take a while because the Niners and their coach Kyle Shanahan loses to his former team, the Washington Redskins, 26-24. But let's keep it moving now as we'll finish off the NFC West and go down to Arizona to the retirement homes where the OGs of the NFL put in work. The Cardinals took care of the Buccaneers 38-33. They put up 21 quick in the first half, and Buccaneers almost came back late, but Jameis Winston did have to leave the game with a shoulder injury. He tried to come back, and he's going to try to play through that AC joint, but Ryan Fitzpatrick had to step in. The Harvard man threw for 290 yards, three touchdowns, and two interceptions as Doug Martin also added a touchdown with 53 yards, and Mike Evans had three catches, 95 yards, and a late touchdown as they were trying to get in the game late. But this game was all Adrian Peterson. AP all day. Purple Jesus is back. Purple Jesus turned into a saint, and then he got elevated into a cardinal. This man is going up the Roman Catholicism ladder, and he's just going to keep going higher and higher until Purple Jesus is a god, and he is an OG, that's for sure, as he ran for 26 carries, 134 yards, and two touchdowns. He had more yards in the first half with the Cardinals than he did in four games with the Saints. He eclipsed his whole Saints career in one game, as AP said, hey, I still got it. I still got fresh legs. And this man was happy. He was smiling. He looked like a rookie out there. And so did Larry Fitzgerald, as Larry Fitz had 10 catches, 138 yards, and a touchdown. These two were smiling back and forth. The rumors came out that the Cardinals GM actually wanted to take AP back in the day, but he got told no by the owner. Well, AP's finally on the team, and the Cardinals finally got back in the win column. But don't look now, they're 3-3, and if this offense can run the ball and they're actually productive, we all know what the Arizona Cardinals defense could do, keep them in games. But man, oh man, you got to watch out for AP. Purple Jesus is back, and I'm loving every second of it, baby, as the Cardinals get the win 38-33. And then we'll go ahead and finish off the NFC West with one of the best teams right now, actually, because the Seahawks are on the bye. That's the Rams sitting at 4-2. Yes, you heard me correctly, the Rams are 4-2 after getting a huge win against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And this was an interesting game off the bat. There was two touchdowns of 75 plus yards in the first 30 seconds of the game. Yes, Farrell Cooper took a TD to the house on the return, and then Leonard Fournette wants to say, hey, you think you can go 75 yards? I can go 75 yards too. As Leonard Fournette breaks to the end zone. He finished the day with 21 carries for 130 yards and a touchdown. He's got a touchdown in every game so far of his career, but he did leave with a foot injury. That's going to be questionable for next week against the Colts, but I think he still does play. He went head-to-head with a former stud rookie running back, Todd Gurley, who ended the day 23 carries for 116 yards. Jared Goff only had to get 124 yards and a touchdown, and they ended up getting the win because Blake Bortles once again went all Blake Bortles, threw an interception, gave the ball back to the Rams, gave them some points, and the Rams ended up getting a big win, 27-17, to improve to 4-2 on the year. And then let's go ahead and look at that Jacksonville Jaguars division down in that AFC South. We had a huge game on Monday Night Football between the Colts and the Titans, and I told you, pick the quarterback that was playing. Andrew Luck is still not back, and Marcus Mariota made his Monday Night Football debut and got you the W as Derrick Henry puts in the dagger in the last seconds to say, hey, Colts, it's not comeback time. There's no Peyton Manning to save you. There's no Andrew Luck. This is the new era in the AFC South. Marcus Mariota, Derrick Henry, and the youngins get it done as the Titans end a 11-game losing streak versus the Colts. Yes, 11 games in a row they had lost. Well, they finally get over the hump, and this was a pickup game. I told you to choose the Titans, and they won you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. So way to go, Titans. And Marcus Mariota, it is a great thing to see you back. Let's finish off that division as we talk about the Texans now, as they got a big win over the Browns. They also covered that 9.5-point spread to make you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. They got the W 33-17, and this is a game that Deshaun Watson just continues to break records and break records and break records. He tied Kurt Warner for 16 touchdown passes in the first five starts, most ever by a rookie quarterback. He's already seventh all time for touchdown passes for the Texans. He hasn't even played six full games. He's seventh all time. This is ridiculous, the things he's doing for the Texans offense. They put up 30 points in four straight games for the first time in team history. Man, I'm sure the Niners and the Browns are kicking themselves in the ass right now, because as I mentioned when this podcast started, the only two winless teams in the NFL are the two teams that had the first overall pick and the second overall pick. That's the Cleveland Browns and the 49ers, and the Browns benching Deshaun Kizer. They look like they're missing a quarterback. The Niners still trying to figure out what they got in CJ Beathard, but they're missing a quarterback. I'm sure both of those teams would love to have Deshaun Watson this year, because he is absolutely tearing it up, connecting with DeAndre Hopkins here and there, and connecting with Will Fuller, who had two catches for 62 yards and a touchdown. Get this stat. Will Fuller has seven catches on the year and has five touchdowns. You want to talk about productive? This man has scored on five of the seven balls thrown to him. What a productive offense this has been so far for Deshaun Watson and all the youngins that the Texans have. And we know about their defense. Yes, J.J. Watt is hurt, but Jadeveon Clowney is playing all over the field, and Joseph had a pick six. This Texans defense picked apart the Browns left and right and really didn't give them a chance to win. We'll keep it moving now in that AFC North. We already talked about the Steelers getting a huge upset win over the Chiefs. Let's go ahead and look at the Ravens as they lost a close game to the Bears. Duh, Bears, and Mitchell Trubisky get it done as Trubisky throws for 113 yards and a touchdown. He is the first rookie quarterback to ever beat the Ravens under the John Harbaugh era. They were previously 9-0. Now they are 9-1. You could put 9-2 because technically they got beat by two rookie quarterbacks in the same game, because Trubisky not only threw a touchdown back, Tariq Cohen, the rookie running back, also threw a touchdown pass on a halfback pass. The little man is only 5'6". There hasn't been a player who's been 5'6 or under to throw a touchdown pass in the NFL in over 100 years. The Bears were getting creative with their running backs. Jordan Howard had one hell of a monster day with 36 carries for 167 yards. A lot of those yards came in overtime as he got a nice 50-60-yard run to put him in field goal position to get the W. And the Bears pull up a huge win over the Ravens as Joe Flacco struggles once again. 180 yards, two interceptions. Why did he have to take a break and not throw any interceptions against the Raiders, huh? He had 10 games in a row he threw an interception, none against the Raiders. Two or more against the Bears, and the Bears' defense isn't even that good. What the hell, Joe Flacco? Why aren't you sharing your McNuggets with the Raiders? Whatever. It's all in the past now, but the Bears did get a huge win to improve to 2-4, and the Ravens dropped to 3-3, but let's go ahead and talk about the Bears' division. Since they won it, we'll go ahead and look at the NFC North, as we had a huge matchup between the Packers and the Vikings, and I got some bad news for you, Packers fans. Aaron Rodgers, broken collarbone. This man is going to be out for a minimum of 8 weeks. A lot of people are riding him off out for the season already, but he still has a slight chance to come back late in the year if the Green Bay Packers can stay relevant and possibly still get a playoff spot. This is a team that's 4-2 now in the year. The Vikings did catch up with them in time with that 4-2 record in that NFC North. But with Aaron Rodgers out, it's going to be Brent Hundley taking over. You might recognize Brent Hundley from UCLA a couple years ago. He's now been sitting as the backup behind Aaron Rodgers for a couple years. He's had a few good preseason games where he put up 4 or 5 touchdowns. So I want to see what the talent this guy has. He did throw 3 interceptions this week, but he was put in short notice. It's going to be interesting to see how they try to mesh around Brent Hundley compared to Aaron Rodgers. Jordy Nelson only had 6 catches for 60 yards. You got to get him involved more. Devontae Parker did have a touchdown. But the Packers, you got to put up more than 10 points. This is like the Raiders team. They're not going to win putting up 10 points a game, regardless of how much their defense plays well or not. They got to score 20, 30 points. Ty Montgomery was back, but it was Aaron Jones who was the leading rusher with 13 carries, 41 yards. It's going to be interesting to see if the Packers can piece it together without Aaron Rodgers. I want to see next week a full game from Brent Hundley before I get a full recap of what's going on there. But it was, at the end of the day, a huge win for the Vikings as they move on into first place with the tiebreaker over the Packers with a huge win, 23-10. And then let's go ahead and finish off. And then let's go ahead and look at another division rivalry as we had the AFC East battling off between the Patriots and the Jets in a game for first place. Between the Patriots and the Jets. I don't even know how I'm saying those words after we embarrassed the Jets earlier this year. But hey, I told you I did not like the point spread from the Patriots again. And the Jets covered the point spread, so we made you some money, 9.5. The Patriots haven't covered the point spread all year long. And the Jets actually had a chance to win this game. They lightweight got bamboozled with Austin Safari Jenkins, his second TD of the day. He gets stripped on the goal line. They call a fumble. They give it back to the Patriots on a touchback, and they just got absolutely screwed. I don't know how they didn't call it a touchdown, but hey, I can't be too mad about it because I was playing against them in fantasy this week. But it was Josh McCown throwing for 354 yards and 2 TDs. The New England Patriots are the first team in NFL history to allow 6 straight 300-yard passing games. And it was Josh McCown putting it up on him. Oh, man, how are the Patriots 4-2? How are they sneaking away with these games? See, this is where I compare the Raiders and the Patriots, where the last 3 games were winnable for the Raiders. And if they were the Patriots, they would have won them, because the Patriots looked like they could have lost the last 3 games, but they find a way to win the game. They find a way to win, and that's just what they do every single year. And now they're separating themselves into first place with a big division win as Tom Brady comes back late with 257 yards, 2 touchdowns. Gronk was getting involved left and right, and even Brandon Cooks had some big catches late, 6 catches, 93 yards, and they get a huge win in a division matchup. Let's go ahead and look at the bottom seller of that division. The Miami Dolphins actually pulled off the upset win over the Falcons, 20-17, as the Falcons blew a 17-point lead. Does that sound familiar? Because they did blow a lead in the Super Bowl last year to the New England Patriots in that same division, the AFC East. And get this, the Falcons have blown 7 straight leads in 7 straight games to teams in the AFC East. I guess the AFC East just has their number, but I don't know. As I mentioned, along with the Denver Broncos, these were the first 2 teams to lose as a 13-point favorite in 5 years. The last 5 years, no 13-point favorite has lost a game. There was 2 this weekend. That just shows you the parity of the NFL right now and all the craziness, because there's no way in hell I would have picked Jay Cutler to win over Matt Ryan, but this was an offense for the Falcons that dominated the first half, and that second half, it seemed like they didn't even have the ball. They were giving it back left and right, and they couldn't control the time of possession. They ended the day with almost twice as many passes as they did run the ball. They didn't learn their lesson, I guess, against New England last year in the Super Bowl, where you got to run the ball in the second half to kill the clock, and the Falcons fall apart once again. Man, this is rough, because they're sitting there 3-2. They could easily be 1-4, 0-5, the way that games have gone for them this year. But the Falcons got to get it together. They didn't lose too much ground this weekend in the NFC South, as the Panthers lost on Thursday Night Football to the Eagles. But the Saints were actually able to gain a ground and improve to 3-2 as they took care of the Lions 52-38. I told you, take the goddamn over, and boy, was there a lot of points in this game. But if I told you that the Saints scored 52 points, how many yards would you think Drew Brees threw for? 400, 500? No, he threw for 186 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions, as it was the defense putting up points. This Saints defense, that was so goddamn bad during the first 3 weeks of the season, has somehow turned it around. I know they came off a bye week this week, so they were prepared for Matthew Stafford and the Lions, but this Saint defense had 3 touchdowns, 6 passes deflected, 5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, and 3 interceptions. Matthew Stafford was getting picked left and right, and he still almost came back and got him into this game. Man, what a shootout that happened down in New Orleans. It was back and forth all day, and it was a crazy score to end on. You don't ever see 52-38 as a final score, but the Saints and that defense got the job done, surprisingly. They traded AP. Mark Ingram has a big day. Alvin Kamara looked great, hurdling people left and right. This was a huge win to improve to 3-2 in the NFC South. They're now only a half a game back. And hey, let's look around at the parity in all the NFL, because in every single division, second place, half a game, game back, half a game back. The biggest lead is the AFC West, where the Kansas City Chiefs have a game and a half lead over the Denver Broncos. But as I said, there are a lot of AFC West games coming up, and we got Thursday Night Football, Raiders, Chiefs. But if we're looking ahead to Thursday Night Football, that means we're looking ahead to Week 7 of the NFL. So you know what time it is, Randy.
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. It's time for Week 7 of Straight Cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden A podcast, where we look at every single game from the upcoming week of the NFL and pick every single bet by the point spread. Let's hop straight into it. Thursday Night Football, we got the Raiders and the Chiefs kicking it off for the AFC West. This year, we were playing Thursday Night Football in Oakland. Last year, we had to travel to Kansas City after Kansas City came off a bye week. This time, things are a little bit more square favored in our side, as the Raiders will be back home against the Chiefs in a win or go home game. As I mentioned, we're now 2-4. Dropping to 2-5 on the year would be huge, and gaining the game on the Chiefs would be huge if we're able to pull off a victory. As we said, we're only 3 games back, but we still have to play them twice. If we can somehow sweep them, that improves our chances in the AFC West dramatically. And let's see what the Raiders can do at home against the Chiefs. The Chiefs getting beat by the Steelers last week, hopefully demoralized, or they could be playing with a chip on the shoulder as they come into Oakland. Andy Reid has had the Raiders number since he has came over from Philadelphia to the Chiefs, and Andy Reid is who we're going to have to be worrying about and trying to outcoach, as our coaches have been getting outcoached left and right, and now we got to try to go up against Andy Reid. This is going to be an interesting matchup, the way that the Chiefs offense has been running the ball, but we saw him stutter last week against the Steelers. Hopefully the Raiders can shut him down a little bit, because help is on the way, as Navarro Bowman, the ex-Pro Bowler, is now an Oakland Raider, and I'm juiced about it. I've talked about it before. I might have even mentioned on the podcast that I wanted the Niners to either trade or release Bowman, and he would end up on the Raiders, because the Raiders' middle linebackers have been absolutely dog shit ever since Kirk Morrison left. I'll be straight up with you. We haven't had an inside linebacker since Kirk Morrison, and so the Raiders finally get a playmaker at middle linebacker. We know Navarro Bowman is coming off that Achilles injury. He still doesn't have the same speed, but he is an upgrade automatically. We were down to our 4th and 5th string linebackers. Markell Lee hurt. Corey James not even playing. We had Brandon Morrow out there who weighs 215 pounds trying to play middle linebacker. That's why we were getting ran on over and over again, and that's why we couldn't make a play to stop Melvin Gordon on that final drive. But Navarro Bowman, I don't even care if he can't cover nobody. Stop the run. Right up the middle, stop the run game, and he's going to have to be huge if he's going to get inserted straight into that starting defense Thursday night against the Chiefs, because the Chiefs want to run. We got to slow down Kareem Hunt somehow, some way. He's still going to get the mismatch receiving out of the backfield. We got to try to slow him down and slow down Travis Kelce. I've been saying it for years and years and years. You want to beat the Raiders, either do it with the deep ball or the tight end. It seems we cannot guard a tight end to save our lives. That's why we went after Obi in the second round, but he still has played. He might be back in a week or two. Sean Smith, as I mentioned it last week, I thought you should have been lining one-on-one up with Hunter Henry the entire game. Just put a body on him. Just let him cover him around like a spy coverage you did back in Madden 2004 watching Michael Vick in the pocket. Just leave Sean Smith on the tight end the full game. We're paying him all this money. He's got to play somewhere, so I want to see him step up, and somebody's got to put hands on Tyreek Hill, because I can almost guarantee you he's going to burn somebody from this Raiders defense. David Amerson's not fast enough to keep up with him. DJ Hayden was our only hope, as much as Raider fans hate to hear his name, but he was our fastest DB last year playing in the slot. Tyreek Hill, you got to stop him on the reverse, got to stop him as much as you can. This is going to be huge on Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin, the Slash Brothers, to get in there and cause some pressure on Alex Smith. And can we please get an interception? We've had 0 interceptions this whole entire year. I don't even care. Just let me get a turnover. Force Kareem Hunt to fumble. He fumbled on one of his first carries in the NFL. Well, Raider Nation, welcome him to Oakland, make him put the ball on the infield, on the dirt, and make him fumble. We need turnovers, and we need this defense to step up, but we need this offense to show up, because as I mentioned, the defense has been playing above expectations while this offense has failed to live up to the hype. Derek Carr in his second game back from injury, I hope he pushes the ball downfield more. It's going to be interesting to see who Marcus Peters lines up across and follows, if it's going to be Cooper or if it's going to be Crabtree, because we all know Crabtree has been having the better season so far this year. This defensive backfield is not full strength with Eric Berry out with an injury, so look for Jared Cook over the middle to get involved. But the one man I want to see involved, Marshawn Lynch. We saw what Le'Veon Bell did last week to the Chiefs. We got to run the ball down the throats, and this is the first week of the season that I want to see Marshawn Lynch get 20 carries. Yes, you heard me correctly. I didn't care before if he was getting 10, 15, but when he's averaging almost 5 yards a carry last week, he should have got 20 carries. And this week, if we're going to beat the Chiefs, we got to run the ball, we got to control the time of possession, and we got to control the turnover ratio. And I think that starts with pounding the rock with Marshawn Lynch up the middle. We got to be able to run the ball, and we got to be able to control the clock, and we need to execute. We need to prolong these drives. No more three and outs, no more short drive. Let's attack downfield. Hopefully we get some play action and calling, but I don't know how I can really hope for too much when Todd Downing's still back there and hasn't proved to be an offensive coordinator so far through 6 weeks of the NFL season. So I might just be getting my hopes up, but God damn it, this is the Bay's golden days, and God damn it, the Raiders are at home and they're 3-point underdogs on Thursday Night Football. So of course I'm going to take the Oakland Raiders. What the hell you think this is? The Kansas City golden days? No, it's the Bay's golden days. So I'm taking my Raiders as the home underdog on Thursday Night Football. The Chiefs got a short week to travel. Hopefully it affects them. Hopefully we get a win, and hopefully we get back into this AFC West playoff picture. But even if we don't, I'm still not giving up on the Raiders, because I think we can lose two more games this year and still make the playoffs. Hell, we lose to the Chiefs this week. We could lose to the Patriots in Mexico. I still think we take the Cowboys down later in the year. I still think we might be able to win out. There's a lot of football left, people. A lot of football left. We're only 6 weeks through the NFL season. We're not even halfway there. A lot of things can happen. We saw the Dolphins go on a run at the end of the year last year. We saw the Lions go on a run at the end of last year. There's a lot of parity this year in football. And as I mentioned, every single division is a half a game, 1.5 games back, and that's only the AFC West. And if the Raiders can make up a game right here at Thursday Night Football, that would be huge for their season, and it's win or go home, baby. Let's go, Raiders. Thursday Night Football. I'm going to try to be in the building, because maybe I got to bring some of that good luck charm back. It was just a couple years ago when Derek Carr, Khalil Mack, Gabe Jackson were all 0-10. Thursday Night Football, it was pissing rain, and there I was sitting in the black hole cheering my motherfucking heart out as the Raiders, Derek Carr, and Khalil Mack got their first wins of their career. So why not again? Why not Thursday Night Football? The rain might be back in Oakland, so why can't we get a win Thursday night? Put me down for the Raiders, +3 points against the Chiefs, Thursday Night Football, prime time. And then let's go ahead as I calm down and we move on to the Sunday matchups. And we'll stick with the AFC West to start it, as the Broncos and the Chargers face off against each other, as the AFC West is just division rivalry week. And we'll see what happens as the Broncos travel to LA for the first time. And the Chargers are 2-point favorites. Yes, they are 2-point favorites, but the tip in Vegas is that the home team always gets 3 points. So they really think the Broncos are going to win by one. So I will take the Broncos +2 points to win on a road. Yes, we don't know Trevor Siemian, his left shoulder. We might see Brock Osweiler, but this Denver defense should do enough to contain Phillip Rivers and force a couple turnovers to probably get points on defense and win this game in a shootout. If the Chargers are favored by 2 points, I'll for sure take the Denver Broncos +2 in a close division matchup. And then let's look at the rest of the Sunday slate. We got the Buccaneers and the Bills facing off in Buffalo. The Buffalo Bills are coming off of a bye. This is going to be interesting to see if Jameis Winston plays. I will stick with the Buccaneers. If not, give me the Bills over the Bucs against Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't trust him against that defense. I know he played it a couple times before, but if Jameis Winston does play, I will take the Bucs +3 points. The Panthers and the Bears should be a close one. It's going to be really dependent on if Luke Kuechly plays, because if he doesn't, Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen could have big days. But the Panthers are favored by 3 points on the road, and I look for Cam Newton to get this team back on track. If Luke Kuechly plays, like I said, I will take the Panthers -3 points. Next up, we got the Titans and the Browns, and the Titans are favored by 5.5 points. We saw what Marcus Mariota did on Monday Night Football, and I've already talked about the Browns too much this year on the podcast. I actually gave them a couple chances to win early in the year. Well, those chances are all said and done now, as I will take the Titans to win -5.5 points over the Browns. Moving on to the Saints and the Packers, and what could have been a huge shootout game between Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, but we will not be seeing Aaron Rodgers. It will be Brent Hundley, and because of that, the Saints are 5.5 point favorites on the road in Green Bay. Man, what a matchup it's going to be. Ah, Brent Hundley, I want to see what you could do. Like I said, I'm waiting for this weekend against the Saints defense. You should be able to tear them up, even though the Saints defense has been playing better. I just don't think Brent Hundley is going to have a chance to outscore Drew Brees. Drew Brees, if he gets on, there's no stopping that man. So I will take the Saints -5.5 with the against a Rodgers-less Packers. Moving on to the Jaguars and the Colts. We got a division matchup. The Jaguars are favored by 3 points on the road. The Colts did not impress me too much from Jacoby Brissett, and I said it on the first week of the podcast. I'm not picking the Colts until Andrew Luck comes back. Andrew Luck, we still don't know. He was back in practice this past week, but if he's not back, I'm taking the Jaguars, even with Blake Bortles. If Leonard Fournette plays, for sure, I'm taking the Jaguars. If not, then things get a little complicated, but Leonard Fournette, he should be in there, and I'll take the Jacksonville Jaguars to win -3 points. The Cardinals and the Rams face off in an NFC West division matchup, and the Rams are favored by 3.5 points at home, and I'm smelling upset alert. Get the retirement home from Arizona. They're taking a vacay out to L.A., and the way that they played this past week, I think the Rams can be run on, even though Aaron Donald is one of the best players in the NFL. I think AP is going to have a chance to spread his wings and fly once again as a Cardinal in their second game, and I look for this Cardinals defense to step up big. Patrick Peterson locked down Sammy Watkins. Honey Badger looking for Cooper Kupp over the middle, and I think this Cardinals team starts to turn things around now that they finally got a running game. They can finally work those play-action passes and work deep downfield, and this Cardinals team might be turning around, and they could tie up the Rams for first place in the NFC West. I will take the Cardinals +3.5 points for the upset. Moving on with another division game, we got the Jets and the Dolphins in the AFC South. The Dolphins are favored by 3 points, but like I said, the home team usually gets 3 points. This is more of a pick'em game, and honestly, I might have to pick the New York Jets the way that they almost beat the New England Patriots last week. I know the Dolphins are coming off of a win over the Falcons, but I'm still not impressed by Jay Cutler and the Falcons, so I might take the Jets and this defense to keep it close. This is a division game, so I'm projecting it's going to end by a field goal anyways, so that way I will take the Jets +3, so it's still a push if they lose by a field goal. Moving on to the Ravens and the Vikings. The Vikings are favored by 5.5 points. This is going to be a defensive battle, as Joe Flacco has looked like garbage and Case Keenum is either hit or miss, but as I mentioned on the last podcast, Teddy Bridgewater has been cleared to practice, so it could be sooner rather than later that the Vikings get Teddy Bridgewater back, with Sam Bradford continuing to struggle. Jared McKinnon looked great this weekend. The Ravens are a team that you never know, and I feel like they always keep it close, especially with John Harbaugh. So I think the smart pick might be the Ravens +5.5 points. The Cowboys will be coming off a bye to come to Santa Clara to face the 49ers. They are favored by 6 points. I definitely look for the Cowboys to win this game by a touchdown. It's going to be interesting to see if Ezekiel Elliott even plays. We know the suspension was up, then it got reversed, then it got upheld, then it got reversed. The NFL just really needs to figure out if they're going to suspend the man or not. I don't know how there's that much leeway in between the arbitrary and whatever it is. They got to figure out if this kid's going to play or not, and if not, it's going to be either Darren McFadden or Alfred Morris. I'm looking for Darren McFadden to take over that backfield. We all saw him run for over 1,000 yards just a couple years ago in his first year as a Cowboy behind that very similar offensive line. I think the Cowboys, even without Ezekiel Elliott, can get the run game down. I think Dak Prescott's going to have a big game. Look for Dez Bryant to get into the end zone and throw up the X, and I will take the Cowboys to win over the Niners by a touchdown and cover that spread. The Bengals and the Steelers face off in an AFC North division matchup. The Steelers are favored by 5.5 points. This is an interesting one because the Bengals are coming off a bye, so they got 2 weeks to prepare for the Steelers, but if the Steelers just beat the Chiefs last week, I think that the Steelers can beat the Bengals. It would be interesting to see if they get the win by a touchdown. 5.5 is close, but I will take the Pittsburgh Steelers by 5.5 points. Next, we got the Seahawks and the Giants as we move to the afternoon slate. The Seahawks are favored by 5.5 points. The Giants coming off of Monday Night Football where they got their first win of the season. I mean, it doesn't even matter if you have any wide receivers, because I didn't have any trust in Eli Manning throwing against his Legion of Boom regardless. The Seahawks coming off a bye, I think they'll be ready for the Giants to travel across the coast into the East Coast. That has been a problem for the Seahawks in the past, but I think with that bye week, they probably I should have got out there a week early. But I will take the Seahawks minus 5.5 points to beat Eli Manning and the Giants. Sunday Night Football, we get a Super Bowl rematch between the Falcons and the Patriots. And this is probably going to be one of the most interesting games of the week. The Patriots get finally get their smallest point spread of the year by being favored by only 3.5 points. But will they finally cover the spread? I don't know. The Atlanta Falcons haven't looked that great this year. But I have a feeling that they're going to be looking for some revenge. Sunday Night Football, they had a 28-3 lead in the first half of the Super Bowl and gave it away. This Patriots defense has let up 300-yard passers 6 weeks in a row. I think they make it 7 with Matt Ryan. If Josh McCown just tore him up, I think Matt Ryan's going to tear him up. If the Falcons can finally get a lead and just run the ball in the second half, I will take the Falcons for the upset. Sunday Night Football to get some Super Bowl revenge. Give me the Falcons plus 3.5 points. And then we move to Monday Night Football as we get another division matchup in that NFC East, the Redskins and the Eagles. The Eagles are tied right now, as I said, best record in football, 5-1. And they're taking on the Redskins Monday night, who just slipped across the 49ers this past weekend. The Eagles are favored by 5 division games. I like only a field goal by the points, but the way that the Eagles are playing so far this year, I think they're able to slow down Kirk Cousins, and I do have the Eagles winning this game by a touchdown to cover the spread. And that's all my picks for week 7 of Straight Cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden Days. And just to give you one last trip rapid fire, I'm taking the Raiders over the Chiefs plus 3 points. I'm taking the Buccaneers if Jameis Winston plays plus 3 for the upset over the Bills. I'm taking the Panthers as a favorite on the road over the Bears. I'm taking the Titans over the Browns, minus 5.5 points. I'm taking the Saints over the Packers, minus 5.5. I'm taking the Jaguars over the Colts, minus 3. I'm taking the Cardinals for the upset, plus 3.5. I'm taking the Jets for the upset, plus 3. Taking the Ravens, plus 5.5 points. I'm taking the Steelers, minus 5.5 against the Bengals. I'm taking the Broncos for the upset, plus 2 against the Chargers. I'm taking the Seahawks, minus 5.5 against the Giants. The Falcons for the upset, Sunday Night Football, plus 3.5 over the Patriots. And the Eagles to get it done in the NFC East, minus 5 over the Washington Redskins. And that, my friend, is every single bet from week 7 of the NFL here on Straight Cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden Days, where you know it's every single week, win, lose, or tie. Raiders till I motherfucking die. Raider Nation, the season is not over. I said last week I was going to hop on the panic button, but I'm keeping my hand just hovered over it as we're now 2-4 heading into Thursday Night Football against the Chiefs. I told you we could still end the season 8-2. Get us back to the playoffs. That would be a 10-6 record. That's a playoff record right there for you. I still got faith in my Raiders. I still got them penciled in as a playoff team. And as I said, if you don't, put your motherfucking money where your mouth is. This is the Bay's Golden Days, baby. I'm Marcus Boucher. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading and subscribing on iTunes and Google Play. You can follow us on social media at Bay's Golden Days. Check out our website, bgdsports.com. And until next week, you know what it is, baby. Stay golden. Golden.
Stay gold, pony boy.